Welcome, everyone, back to Season 5 of Food Conversations and to the guests that we have as had in our studio who have really sparked up the community and brought food, especially food sovereignty, to the forefront. Now, before we begin, once again, we acknowledge that we are living and working on the ancestral, unceded, and essentially stolen lands of the Shukupmik people, and that fairly resolving this situation is an ongoing responsibility for us all. Now, today I have the pleasure of having someone join us in the studio who has brought special skills to the production of food, and not just any food, but the food we call the staff of life, that is, and most listeners will know, that is bread, for which for about 10,000 years has been the food that transformed our species and our lives by allowing us to live in a fixed community for many years or even for centuries without moving here and there to find food. Our guest is Marcus Jaeger, a trained master baker, now living with his wife Ursula and their four children, a mere 7,817 kilometers from the city where he was born, Mannheim, southwest Germany, and sharing bread, buns, and sweet baked goods with the local community through his home-based business called Inspired Breads. Marcus, welcome to Food Conversations.
Good morning, Warren.
It's great to have you here, and to have the person whose bread and whose buns and whose other goodies I have personally purchased and consumed over a number of years. So on that note, one of the first things that happened when you got to Salmon Arm was you got a pie.
Oh, yeah, found out that we chose the right town. Neighbors stopped by in the morning and welcomed us to the town by giving us a pie.
Do you remember what kind of pie it was?
I guess it was an apple pie.
Of course, good old Canadian apple pie.
Absolutely.
Well, that can kind of give you a little message that says, maybe this isn't such a bad idea. Now, let's talk about the name of your business, Inspired Breads. How did that name come into your consciousness?
First, we got the inspiration from food, inspiration from traditions, and inspirations from life to pretty much form the products we offer. But the name had something very personal for me as well, because I never ever thought I will become a baker. It was so
listeners,
far away.
Listeners, just pay attention to this. This is another person who said, this is not where I'm going, and then one day got there.
my world was always to go to computers, to be a programmer, and I studied computer science and economics. So really far away from ever producing food. And there was this situation where I had to finance my apartment. And so I worked in a little bakery around the corner. And just to pack bread, was it because I love bread? No, the time was perfect before university, really, to have a job on the side before
need the
I
money.
Start university.
You needed the money, yeah.
But something happened there. I packed bread at a little window, in front of a little window. And I saw how flour transformed into a bread, into an outcome at the end of the day. And while I just watched that the first couple of days, it really fascinated me. And it really changed my life. I saw that there was an outcome at the end of the day. While programming, for example, you program weeks and months on a part of a program where you find out maybe in the future that will be part of the big program. It's not really satisfying. Yes, you maybe solve problems, but you really don't have an outcome at every single day. And I really love that, to have that beautiful, good flavor product at the end of the day. And you knew that you either produced something super nice or you messed up, but at least you knew at the end of the day.
You said something to me about the song, the song of the bread, the song of the flour. Tell listeners about that.
People are fascinated that I really changed my career just with that little experience. And, you know, I already had that close to me that I really could imagine myself being a baker. But then I was surrounded by racks of bread, fresh baked bread. And what happens normally when bread comes out of the oven and cools down, it develops little windows on the crust and they give a crackling noise. The sound is almost like sitting in front of a fireplace and you hear that crackling sound. And that was really like, we call it the song of the brat. And it was like the siren song, whatever, you can't escape.
Sure.
That was really one of those moments I said, yep, it's done. And I went home and I told my parents that I will leave university and will become a baker, which is not a very proud moment for parents.
Because bakers in Germany are not sort of high on the social scale.
No, it's not. Honestly, it was the first time that I experienced that baker is something really nice when I had the first people asking, okay, can I talk to the baker? And I said, oh my God, there's a problem. And they just wanted to shake my hands and say, oh my God, I've heard you're a master baker, and almost bowed in front of us. It was very nice to see that somehow, whatever, here it's maybe more seen as a little wonder coming out of the bread than really just being a regular product.
It's said that the bakers who served the workers who built the Egyptian pyramids had vast ovens that they used to cook the bread, because bread was a staple in ancient Egypt as well. And their place to work was very well endowed. It had lots of, you know, the latest 2000 BC equipment, if you like, and lots of people to carry the bread around as well. Let's talk a little bit about obviously that moment, and the song, the siren song of the bread called out to you, and it's still singing in your ear. But let's talk a little bit about where you've ended up. You've ended up on a 10-acre farm in Salmon Arm with fruits and vegetables and chickens and goats, and that's probably also something you might have wanted to do, but never thought you would eventually do one day.
Never, ever. Definitely. You know, with choosing being a baker, I have to say it changed my whole life. Because not only do I love that profession, without choosing the baker, I would not have met my wife. I would not have ended up in Canada.
We're going to talk about Ursula. And so, Ursula, if you're listening, you can hear what stories Marcus is going to tell us about you. But she was obviously an exceptional person. We're going to talk about that as well. So, the journey. Your father was a skilled toolmaker.
Yeah.
What kind of tools did he make?
Fine mechanic items, whatever. Pretty much tools to produce other tools with.
Okay.
And he had to choose trade really early in life, because it was right after the war, and he pretty much had to add to the family income.
He was the oldest son.
He was the oldest son. He had to start a profession early to support the family. And I pretty much witnessed whatever that he was the oldest, he was the only one in trade. His other two brothers, one was a doctor, he was a dentist. The other one was a professor in psychology. And I really have to say I'm happy that I was my father's son, because I saw so much love for family and maybe the down-to-earth attitude of a trade. Very proud having a trade.
Indeed. At first, you mentioned that he'd been a little disconcerted about the fact that you're going into a trade yourself, but in the end, he completely changed, and he saw... First of all, he saw something which you saw in him. You described his sense of responsibility. You don't just start something and play at it. You really put your heart and soul into it.
Oh, absolutely. And the moment, whatever, you accept a position, you also accept responsibility for things. You know, when we came to Canada, for example, we took care of a bakery, and the owner of that business left after 2 months where we were in Canada to the island and had her little farm going, and we took care of the bakery.
And that's, now we're getting to this the peripatetic part of your life, the part where you wander and things start to change. So you're in, after this decision, you went to a school that specialized in training master bakers. Where was this school? Was it near where you lived?
It was very close to my home. It was in Weinheim. It's maybe 10 kilometers away from Mannheim. Hmm. But for my wife...
She came from quite a distance.
She came from the Bodensee. That's where Austria and Switzerland have the border with Germany. So it's around 500 kilometers away. And being on that school, you know, for girls, it's not so common, whatever, to be in a baker position, and not so common to be a master baker. So there were two girls and 22 guys, whatever, in there. So I had to be fast when I met my wife, whatever, too.
You took her out for a dance?
Not really. But within a week, we were actually a couple. Actually, just last week, we celebrated our 20-year anniversary that we met.
Well, congratulations on the air to the whole of Sabinarm. What was it? Obviously, there were a lot of young men looking at those two young women. What was the spark between you? Because she was obviously an exceptional person in terms of her skills.
We both read people, and we sense weakness in a room, and we normally reach out our hands to the weak ones to lift them up, and I found that as a very nice quality to see that she was the same like I did. So we really wanted to even the weak ones off the class, whatever, to get them over the edge to become a master.
So you became sort of tutors,
yeah,
for some of the other students in the school.
Exactly.
Is this school, in the German context, is this school that's quite well known? And I mean, she came from 500 kilometers away. That's not something you do lightly.
It was the Federal School of Baking. So it was the top number one school in Germany to become a master baker, or pretty much to develop recipes, whatever, spread with the rest of Germany. So a very well known
very
school.
Very well reputed, yes.
Yeah.
I just remind listeners that I'm talking today with Markus Jaeger, who is a master baker and the owner and worker, hard worker in Inspired Breads. And it certainly is a pleasure to have you talking about bread from a much more intimate perspective than just putting it in your mouth and enjoying it. So you met in a school. It was a well-known school. And Ursula actually distinguished herself in a fairly exceptional way. First of all, she's one of only two women in this class. But also, she became known as a special baker. What's that about?
She was in 2000, she was Germany's best new baker. So she won the contest. So every province has their every city has their contest. Every province has the contest after that. And then there's a federal championship. And she was the federal champion in Germany.
So she had to go through all these layers to get there.
Yeah.
So what did she have to do in order to become Germany's best new chef?
She's very efficient. And she has just the feel for bread.
So do you have to bake a special kind of bread or just produce three times as much as the next person?
No, you have pretty much to see that the outcome from, you know, you bake 10 breads, the 10 breads have to be the same. They have to show that first you know the skill, that you show that you can have a very nice quality, but also whatever that you're time efficient.
Now, when you graduate from the most esteemed baking school in Germany, you have to decide what to do next. And that was an interesting conundrum for you and Ursula. You weren't, at this point, you weren't married, but you were together. What prompted you to make what you next made, which is a decision to travel? Have bread, will travel.
The distance between our towns were pretty much the decision that we were so newly together that we did not want to make the decision right away. Do we move in her town? Do we move to my town? Do we meet in the middle? And so one of those possibilities was really to apply into the world and say, okay, let's have some experience together in a foreign country if possible. And then coming back and settle wherever the wind will blow us.
So you had an idea that you would go back to Germany maybe,
yeah,
after this had happened?
Oh,
You traveled and you do. A lot of people in Sabinarm do that. The kids graduate from high school and they want to go off somewhere and see the world, and then they end up saying, well, gee, it was quite nice in Sabinarm. They come back. So you're going to come back to Germany, but you lined up quite a number of unusual countries that you were thinking of going to. You mentioned to me Dubai. You mentioned Japan, then, of course, some of the colonies, the ex-colonies of the British Empire, which seem to be scattered all over the world. But you eventually settled on Vancouver because?
It was first. That opportunity came first.
They ran to the finish line first.
You know, we had the director from the school coming in and came into the classroom and saying, okay, would anybody here be interested in working as a baker in Vancouver? And honestly, we had a second, whatever. I looked to my now wife, and she looked to me, whatever, and our hands went up faster than we could. And we said, it's us. But honestly, to that time, and I really apologize to all Canadians, we thought Vancouver is America. And so it was just, okay, it was a city came up and we put our hands up because we wanted to go somewhere. And we are really happy it was not America because we love it here in Canada.
It's a little quieter here.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. It's also characteristic of so many people's lives that something happens and you leap into the situation and then the die, as they say in dies iacta est, which in Latin means the die has been cast, it has been thrown, and here we go. So you and your best baker girlfriend, soon to be your wife, moved to Vancouver, and there you took on a business, a bakery that was run by somebody who had trained as a master baker in Germany as well.
In the same school, actually.
In the same school.
In the same school. We had no idea who it is, but the director of the school often mentioned that person, that somebody made that course and went to Canada and had something very unique to offer for her city. Very young lady, I guess she was 35 or so when we came to Canada. No, I don't even think, not even.
Did you hear why she came to Canada? Was there something like somebody said we got opportunities in Vancouver and she put her hand up, or?
I don't know the exact reason, but we pretty much came with the same attitude towards food.
And obviously a sense of adventure. People don't travel, 7,000 kilometers just because, somebody made them. You did it because you thought, well, this will be interesting, this will be fun, we'll learn something.
But it was leaving the country without being too courageous. It is tougher for people who really make the decision to leave Germany and then really settle in a new country. We came here and I told my parents I will be back in 3 to 6 months, which they don't like anymore, or they don't trust me anymore because it's 20 years ago that I said that. But it is another thing to be here, to like it here, and to stay here than really leaving everything behind at once. So I always say it was the easier part coming without that burden. Okay, whoa, we left everything behind and we have to make it here. We pretty much slided into it.
And you had skills. You weren't coming without any, as they call them, marketable skills. You could do something pretty well.
Yeah. I remember that we arrived actually and had to go to a port of entry to get our working visa for that. And I know that that lady, it was an officer, she leaned over the table and really looked a little bit angry and said, so you think your skills are so much better than the Canadian ones?
And really?
You know, we have really good resumes. We did a lot in Germany and we could be really proud what we did. So we didn't hesitate to say, yes, we are. And she really had that little smile on her face. And said, I just wanted to test you how much you believe in yourself. And even when we applied for 1 year to stay, she said, but that would be October. Isn't December the busiest time for bakers? So she gave us 14 months instead of the 12 we asked for, just because she was so impressed about our answer. And sometimes you have to be lucky and courageous to give that answer back.
You open your mouth and out come words, and later you say, well, how did I know the right thing to say at that point in time? So you got started in a bakery, a small bakery that served between half a dozen and a dozen other places. You took the bread to these other places with somebody who knew how to do master baking. Clearly, you must have struck the owner as somebody who, as a couple who had skills, as you had said you did, because within a year, you were running the bakery.
Within exactly 1 year after we came to Canada, we were the owners of that bakery. And that not just because we had money, because we did not. We came with pretty much $1,000 in our pockets to Canada. And You know, when the question came up, are you interested in buying the bakery? We pretty much pulled our pockets out and said, you know, that we don't have any money to buy it. And then came a sentence and that changed our life. It was really, but I believe you can. And she pretty much financed the buying of the bakery by herself because no bank ever would have believed in us. You know, I was at the bank, whatever, and they said, you know, you have no record here in Canada, whatever, we can't give you anything. But that woman pretty much said, whatever, okay, let's sit down in the notary, and we promised that we pay back I guess it was almost $400,000 within 10 years. And we paid it off in 3.5 years.
My goodness.
Almost 7 years earlier than we thought. And when that happened, we knew so much more is possible.
And she clearly, she knew after working with you for roughly a year, she knew that you were not triflers. When you put your mind to doing something, you put your, as I say, your shoulder to the wheel and pushed. You had that sense of responsibility that your father modeled for you, and she could see it, and she wasn't unhappy leaving you in control of her baby.
Absolutely, and that what it was. I guess it was more of a concern that the bakery falls into good hands and somebody brings it to the next level than really making a lot of money out of it. And when we came to Canada, we brought a lot to the plate. My wife is not only a baker, she's also a pastry chef. And I still have that background from computer science and economic that I could write programs on our own, that we had spreadsheets where we split the products. We had invoices linked to it. We had the recipes printed out for the bakery department to pretty much guarantee the quality, guarantee no waste, and avoid errors.
And automate processes to take the drudgery, as they call it, out of them. You didn't have to go and saying, oh, we got to do it by hand. And
exactly.
It took us late in the evening to do all this paperwork. And that kind
of stuff. I've been there. You start really late in the evening, so you might make a little error in calculation if you have to use the calculator.
And if you have a lot of bread sitting around that you have to pay attention to, absolutely. Remind again listeners that I'm talking with Marcus Yeager, who is a master baker and the inspired owner of Inspired Breads here in Salmon Arm. So here you are, you've got your own bakery, things are moving ahead. The business by repute, you didn't do any advertising, started to expand. People liked the bread you produced. There was something, what was it about your bread that people would tell you they liked that made you go from half a dozen to a dozen places you distributed to, I think in the end, over 100, 120 or something
120,
like that.
120, yeah.
Yeah. What was it that people were saying to you about the bread and what you were doing to make it?
Our idea of baking, both of our ideas, Ursula and mine, was to go back to the roots of baking. We both worked for bakeries in Germany where we were a little bit disappointed that they used a lot of premixes and additives, in air quotes, dough improvers, which not really improve the dough. They pretty much guarantee you more of an even outcome.
I think you called it the sea of sameness.
That what normally happens in supermarkets when you compete yourself to other breads. I read that book, it's called Different. And it's pretty much escaping the competitive herd. And they talk about whatever goes through a cereal aisle in a supermarket. What really is the difference from those cereals?
Was that book different about bread, or was it about following your own path?
Following your own path.
Yeah.
It described how little kids paint blue mountains and red lakes, and then their teacher tell them whatever, oh, you can't do that. A lake has to be blue and a mountain has to be green. And sometimes taking out the spirit and making everything uniform is not fun. We had the talk yesterday, whatever, that we said, whatever, how much nicer it's sometimes to have those little different looking vegetables in your basket, whatever. And I actually enjoy the uniqueness of a shape of a carrot when it is.
It's not perfect.
Exactly.
As people would like it to be.
That imperfection can be the outstanding part.
You know, and our ancestors, knew that when you grow something, it doesn't always grow the same way each time. And when we gathered food, which was what we did for 400,000 years before the last 10,000 years, we knew that you had to find what Mother Nature had done, and she would do a lot of different things, and you had to get the one that you preferred, but you would get also ones that were pretty good and almost the same, but you didn't mind the variety, you didn't mind blemishes on food. Although your skill and Ursula's skill is considerable, and you can actually, by adjusting small nuances in the way you produce the bread, you can make it so it has a certain consistency, but it's through skill, not through an additive that you throw in that, you know, increases moisture content or, you know, viscosity or whatever. So here you are. You've got your own bakery in the mighty metropolis of Vancouver. But things at a personal level, personal health level, are not necessarily going the way they should. Talk about that a little bit, because that was another thing that changed, that led to change that turned out in the end to be very constructive change.
You know, we grew that bakery, and like you said, we ended up at the end to deliver almost to 120 stores and supermarkets in the Lower Mainland. And it was not by going to many supermarkets and to approach them to buy our bread. It was pretty much the word of mouth. And, you know, when we supplied a new supermarket, the opening of a market is mostly where, when you have a really nice display and you put everything in you can, other bakery department managers stop by for the opening of the competition's market, and they see your product there, and they say, that would be nice for our store as well. So
what was the feedback you got about what they saw and what they liked? What was it?
We had a lot of different things. First, whatever, we worked with different grains, whatever, and that added to the plate of a supermarket. You know, it's not common that people work with Kamut, Emma, Einkorn, Khorasan, almost forgotten grains. So it was something new in the shelf. But also, whatever, we, for example, in Vancouver offered half loaves. And we considered those half loaves as a window into the bread because people could see how the inside looks. What is normally hidden by the crust was pretty much, okay, see, we don't have anything to hide. And that, together with a label, which is pretty much minimal, because we were not known about what we put extra into a bread. We were known for what we leave out of breads.
It's a wonderful concept.
But making it more simple and going back to old traditions sometimes top the qualities of the high-designed product lines.
Did you call the business Inspired Breads there? Or is that the name that you adopted when you came
here?
I
always wanted to have that inspired somehow in it, because our past, whatever, from the moment we met to the bakery we have here in Salmon Arm, was a lot of inspiring moments, and we met a lot of inspiring people on the way, so it was a no-brainer to use that.
Now, unlike the transitions that took place early in your life, you know, your instructor says, Vancouver, and you say, yes, sir. This was a transition that loomed, that came out of situations that developed that were not pleasant. Both you and Ursula were starting to feel literally unwell, physically unwell. Ursula, in fact, had a significant skin issue that was stress-related, and obviously you sought medical attention. Did you get a clue from that medical attention, I'm asking this as a family physician myself, that you needed to change, that you needed to do something to lower stress levels?
Yes, definitely. You know, we got that chance, and we took it, and we worked, and worked again. And with four kids, there was barely time, whatever, for life. I really worked 363 days a year, and my days off were the 25th of December and the 1st of January, where the markets were somehow closed.
Somehow. How did they dare do that?
I considered Sunday my day off because I was only 6 hours in the bakery. And it took its toll.
Yeah.
And, you know, a crow can be nice, and it's nice on paper, but the moment where we saw that we are not invincible, we reacted. And I am very happy, actually, that we got that hint of being sick. to change life, to make a decision to not go there forever, because...
You also were... The way you ran your business was very much hands-on from you, as opposed to somebody says, okay, we'll delegate all the responsibilities. You know, you mix the flour, you knead the bread, or whatever. You do... You had other people working. I believe you had up to about 30, 35 employees. Yeah. But you were still engaged, deeply engaged in producing the bread that you sold in the various 120 places around town.
Yeah. It is very hard to let go sometimes when you develop something. And we were always present. We had a 24-hour bakery at the end. And I was there in the night, and I delivered a lot of the stores because I wanted to see what happens in the marketplace. It's sometimes important to watch the markets, to know the departments, to know what is out there. If there's a new product coming from another company, at least you saw and could react to it. And letting go was not us.
While you were... running this bakery in Vancouver, did you see the people who were your sort of competition, did you see them changing, noticing what, look at what Ursula and Marcus are doing, maybe we should be doing something like that? Or people who came to you and said, we want to be doing what you're doing because we think it's a higher quality of bread. We want bread that people want to buy because they know it's safe, it doesn't have a lot of unpleasant chemicals in it. But also, it's baked in a certain way with a certain personal touch. Did you have either bakers themselves or stores or just people come up and say, we want more of this sort of stuff?
Definitely. I in general see a big change, or I saw a big change in the marketplace for years. You know, when we delivered the first markets and I came in with, for example, one tray of my bread, whatever, and the big bread companies delivering there with two big stacks of bread, they were smiling and laughing, oh, is it even worse coming in here? But 10 years later, those two big stacks of bread from those bread companies shrank, while more little micro bakeries, micro other businesses came in and took shelf space away from them.
Or artisan bread.
We see that trend in baking, but we also see the trend in microbreweries, wineries. Everything goes back to small batches, to something unique out there. And I guess whatever, we make that really nice out there by bringing those extra products.
And people were noticing it. People were paying attention to what you were doing. And there was sort of an expand. I mean, it's fascinating. I just imagine this great stack of McGavin's bread or Sunbeam bread piled up in heaps. And then, you know, as Goliath stands over there with all that bread, David comes in with his little slingshot of artisan bread made with a lot of special care. And sooner or later, Goliath collapses to the ground and David says, well, I'm happy to be here selling you some nice bread that you'll probably
love. It is a very good trend.
That's a very good trend. Well, I've said this to a number of guests on our show, and that is that the trends are clear. The trends are away from mass-produced, uniform, and fundamentally bland and uninteresting products, food or otherwise, and towards connections with both the people who produce the bread and or other products, and also to the values that underlie what they're doing. In other words, values are starting to matter to people. It's not just the cheapest product on the market. It's a really good product that you feel safe with. So here you are, not doing well. Health problems are looming. You know something has to happen. What happened next?
We accidentally actually saw Salmon Arm by driving through. We have butcher friends, and we always have a cow directly. We ordered from them, and they normally delivered it to us in Vancouver. And they said, whatever, you guys are never coming out of Vancouver. You are picking up your cow this time on your own. And, you know, we said, why not? And so I left, whatever, as a baker, I'm used to work in the night. I left Vancouver midnight. And at 5 o'clock in the morning, I had that. I came down Tappan and I saw the lake. It was almost unreal because the sun was coming out. There was a little bit mist all over the lake. It was one of those moments where I said, oh my God, it's so beautiful. The rest of the car all were sleeping and we were spending time in the Kootenays. And we saw how our friends, whatever, left the big city and produce on their farm in a little workshop behind and had their butcher store. And we fall in love, whatever, having peace of mind, but also the business very close to the house. And my wife Googled places in the Kootenays. And I said, you know, before you look at anything, the best place I saw on the whole journey, whatever, towards.
So you went to a number of different places.
We drove from Vancouver to the Kootenays.
Okay.
But at 5 o'clock in the morning, I really had that moment where I thought, oh my God, that's it.
Your Eureka moment.
Exactly. Like pretty much the inspired moment of working at that window.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And so you started to look for a place to live on.
Yeah.
And that meant you had, of course, to sell the bakery in Vancouver and buy into some kind of place to live here in this part of the world, in Salmon Arm area. How did that go? Was that one of those things where somebody came along to buy a bakery in Vancouver and somebody else came along and said, well, we've got this property? Was it nice and easy like that, or was it a little more complicated?
You know, since I met my wife, we were always very lucky. And I somehow wonder how much courage we had. We pretty much made a $200,000 non-refundable offer to a house here, the place where we live right now, 1st of October 2016. And to that time, we had the bakery not even listed for a sale. And we told the people, the owners of the house, that in half a year we will move here and we finalize the sale. So we bought pretty much the house before we really put the bakery up for sale. But we somehow knew that all will fall into place. And we really had an offer in November, and we finalized the sale 1st of December in 2016.
Just took a month or two.
Yeah. So we were lucky again that it all worked out. And it was one of the most beautiful moments. We left the Vancouver area at 2 o'clock in the night on March 15th, 2017. It was the nicest thing to leave the city lights in the back mirror and to pretty much head into the really, really dark and pretty much in the unknown. We had no idea of farming, and we wanted to have a little hobby farm. We wanted to have no debts, but we wanted to be self-sufficient on our little farm. It was another adventure we had.
It was another magical moment in your life.
Oh, definitely.
Sitting there listening to the song of the bread and then heading off into the void. You know, a lot of people, they get anxious if they're going somewhere where they don't know what the outcome will be. But there's another way to look at it. You're going to some potential new adventure where you and your family are going to spread your wings and gain a new set of friends. Remind listeners once again that I'm talking with Marcus Yeager, who is a master baker and the owner, with his wife Ursula, of Inspired Breads. And Inspired is a name that, as you have been listening to the show, has been a recurrent theme. An inspiration comes along, you follow up on it, and the next step is, oh, look what we're doing now, and isn't this good? So you had the hobby, you bought this 10-acre property, you'd seen it, and you knew sort of what it looked like. But then, as you said, we hadn't been farmers before, so there were some new steps to take.
Like the time when we came to Canada, there's some energy in leaving things behind and starting something new. I always say it's almost like having a white sheet of paper in front of you and starting writing to write your history completely new. Nobody judges you for any past things, but welcomes you pretty much whatever to develop in each direction you want to. And we got a lot of energy from that. And, you know, I know that I woke up at 3 o'clock in the night and walked over to the work shop we have and started building a chicken shed and things like that out of the blue. And I should not have built it so perfectly, because after that, my wife had a lot of more projects for me, because she said that turned out well, so other things will turn out well as well.
Success breeds more success and work. More work as well. So you started up. This is where you finally got to put the word inspired into your business. It instead of just being, you know, the bakery, it was inspired bread. What was that moment like for you? Because you said you'd always wanted to put it in there somewhere.
You know, we took over a bakery in Vancouver, and of course we left the name. And creating something from scratch, a bakery from scratch, was of course always on our mind. And we knew that we will bake again. It's way too much of a passion for us that we could just forget about it and buy bread. You can't go back in buying bread or whatever if you created your own all the time. And I was very lucky to meet again somebody who told me that the next day a program called L'Entrepreneur starts in Sammenau. And I really was the last person signing in, because it was really the evening before she told me about it. And I stopped by there and I just thought, okay, why not? And I had to witness how great this city is by encouraging new startups to offer a program like that. We were all in a boat, and pretty much it's a competition, but it was not a competition, because we all were friends. We all were happy for each other that people had ideas beyond our own idea. I love to talk to entrepreneurs, because the difference to talk to an entrepreneur is that they almost close their eyes in front of you and tell the story not only by their mouth, they tell it by their heart. And that's when you see that you have a real entrepreneur.
Because their body language tells you that they're committed to what they're doing.
Exactly. There were a lot of people really entrepreneurs there.
Now, one of the processes that takes place with L'Entrepreneur is that you have to develop a business plan. You have to develop a trajectory that you're going to follow if and when you set up your own business. What was that like for you in sort of introducing you to the next phase of your life?
We had no idea what to expect in a smaller town, and we had pretty much to develop a plan in different layers. For example, if the idea was to go to farmers markets, but of course there was a thinking, what if the income from the farmers markets is not enough? There would be a next step, for example, to approach markets, to approach restaurants. And the last idea even was to teach baking, whatever, in a kind of bake and sip moment, whatever, that we produce that, whatever, that we wait that hour until it's proofed. And during that time, we have maybe a sip of wine with customers, and then we bake the bread. And so it was in multiple layers, that idea. But because of L'Entrepreneur, you had to make that speech in front of many people in that old cinema. People knew already before the first farmers market here in Salmon Arm started that we will have a business there. So on the first day of the market, we had lineups already at our booth.
And this was after L'Entrepreneur.
That was after L'Entrepreneur.
They'd seen you, they'd heard you, they saw what you're doing, and they obviously liked it.
Oh, it was amazing. You know, being sold out at the first day of the market, and people say, oh, can I buy some of those baskets? And so, okay, those were really filled in the beginning of the market. It was a wonderful moment. I guess we were sold out 6 markets in a row, and always had to increase the production. But it showed us how much potential is in that city, and that it's definitely enough to stay with our first layer of idea instead of approaching other layers.
So it was a real revelation for you. At that point, you had taken the plunge, you had stepped into this sort of marketing, it's called a sort of a competition, but as you pointed out, it's a very congenial, very, very amiable competition, because people are all on the same track and they root for one another. And I've been to the L'Entrepreneur event, and it is very much like that. It's got a little bit of pizzazz, but it's not focused on marketing against other people. It's more that you're marketing your own story and telling them.
Yeah.
That's what's going on. So you sold out in your first farmer's market. That told you something. Now you have found your way to suppliers for the grains. You found your way to, I think it's three farmers markets now. Which ones you go to? And just so listeners know, in case they want to go and buy some bread, which farmers markets do you go to and when?
So we go to the Saturday downtown market at Ross Plaza, a wonderful market happening throughout the year. We are even there right now in the winter every 2 weeks. There's this all-organic market happening at the Uptown SQ parking lot every second Wednesday at the moment, every Wednesday during
the
year.
Yes.
And we are also part of the Enderby Farmers Market Fridays on Cliff Avenue. In the winter, it was in Splatson Center. Hmm. It's not happening at the moment.
That big, wonderful building.
It's a beautiful building.
Oh, my. What a beautiful building. Do you sell the same breads or the same products at every place? Or have you found that certain things are more popular in Enderby, say, than they are in Salmon Arm or in the organic market versus the downtown market?
At the moment, it evens out a little bit. We had definitely, for example, pretzels were selling way better in Salmon Arm in the bidding that it was in Enderby. But it's always like everywhere where you start showing your bread that you have also to introduce those. You have to educate a lot of people with new grains they never had about those ancient wheats, those new methods, sprouted versus not sprouted.
You know, I have to tell you, my first interest before I went into medicine was archaeology. And when I look at the names of the ancient grains that you have in your bread, I have all these visions. A good friend of ours was an archaeologist in the Middle East, and she actually made bread out of not one of these grains, but another kind of material that was used widely 15 or 20,000 years ago, before these fixed communities were established and the grains that you're using. And it just, my imagination runs wild when I see the names of Emmer and Khorasan, and know the history of them. They were the grains that we, long before pesticides, long before soil amendments of one chemical sort and another, these were the foods that kept our species able to live in one place and not have to starve in the middle of winter. It was a huge change in human history. And there you are, baking it in Salmon Arm, British Columbia.
You know, we had to look for alternatives. I, especially here in Canada, hear so often I'm celiac. I was a baker for 7 to 8 years in Germany, and during that time I met two celiac people. And when I came to Canada, every market I hear 6, 7, 8 people saying, whatever, I'm celiac. And it is quite fascinating when those same people tell me that they made a European trip and that they ate bread there and they had no problem at all. So Canada is known actually for a very high gluten amount in the regular wheat. And then
red number two.
Yeah. And then
everybody uses it.
And then we have, as an extra ingredient on those fluffy breads, extra gluten added to an already high natural gluten amount in it. I remember that we talked about Saskatchewan wheat when we were in Germany, that they blended sometimes with the wheat in Germany when we had a bad crop, when we really had a low gluten amount in those natural flours.
Mm.
And so we blended it with Saskatchewan wheat just to have a higher gluten amount. And so it is not always really that people have a problem with wheat. It's the problem of the quality of the wheat here.
And I understand that gluten in some of these older grains is it has different properties. It's more water soluble, something of that nature.
Yeah.
So it's not the same identical chemical as is found in the strain of grain that is used almost universally on this continent.
You see it by the size of the breads, whatever. You know, when I do the same recipes with different grains, I see really that the size of a rye bread or the size of an emmer bread is smaller because it can't hold the gases in the bread. as much, whatever, if the regular white flour can.
The place where you've been able to find these ancient grains is right here in the area, Fieldstone Organics.
We are so lucky having them in our area.
Talk about Fieldstone Organics. We're going to have them on a show one of these days, I'm sure.
I met those the owners in Vancouver, actually, on a trade show, and I love that they were so passionate about what they have to offer, and vice versa. They were quite fascinated how much passion I had for my kind of bread, and I picked them up after the trade show and invited them over to my bakery, and we had a very nice talk. And when I moved in that area, I really had no idea where Fieldstone is, but so I Googled where to buy flour, and we were
said,
so
just down the
blessed
road
in that area that we first have Fieldstone close by, but we also have the Rogers Mills, and they had Brewer's, a very, very nice store, which is a shame that it is closed for home bakers, because it was very nice to buy all kinds of flours and grains in that little store as well. Mm. But we have Fieldstone there. So I stopped by there. I wanted to buy my Spalt flour and my Emma flour and my Einkorn flour. And they said, okay, we only sell grains here. It's a granary. So I came home to my wife, whatever, with those bags of grains and a mill. So we
You bought the mill?
Yeah, I bought directly a mill.
Some
there.
People buy the store. You bought the mill.
And so we grind our own flour from Emma, Corazon, and Spalt, and use them in small batches.
I saw the picture of your grinding apparatus, and it's quite a small
It is a small
item.
Device, yeah.
It's wooden, too.
Yeah, it is wooden.
It's beautiful. Yeah. It's beautiful. So you have this incredible source of this wide variety of grains, including grains that take us right back to the early times of human experience in cities and towns where bread became the staple. Why don't we close, we're approaching the end of the show, why don't we close with you describing the process of making a loaf of bread? We'll assume that each loaf you make is going to be a little different and it's going to have its own form of beauty. But the process of going to Fieldstone, getting the grain, bringing it home, and then what happens?
So the first thing is actually whatever to source good ingredients and to limit ingredients. It's too often that people say, okay, how much sugar do you have in your bread? We don't need that part in a bread. So really going back to the basics for us means whatever flour, water, salt, maybe yeast, but sourdough as well. So we bake with a lot of sourdough. First, fermentation is something really good. We sprout a lot of our grains because sprouting breaks down the grain, makes it easier to digest.
Increases some of the nutritional value as well.
Exactly. And we try to use the whole grain in those ancient grains. So that means sometimes whatever, yes, the size of the bread is not as big. And we have a lot of people
beautiful
smiling and saying, oh my God, it has the same weight like a Wonder Bread 10 times the size. But that's when we also have to say, you know, we want to sell taste and flavor, not air.
And what? You're not selling air? I thought that was a big market for air.
And the other thing is that we give our doughs time. You know, often in those big bakeries we worked, you push products from the mixer to the oven because you want to really have those fast processes. It's part of the procedure, whatever, to have everything fast pushed through the oven. And that is a mistake because you don't want to have a yeast flavor in some of those breads. You want to have a natural developed flavor. So you give those doughs just a lot of time.
Speaking of slow, describe the life history of a loaf of pumpernickel.
Oh, yeah. Pumpernickel is a 100% rye bread, only the grains normally. And pumpernickel, the original pumpernickel in Germany, is only allowed to be called pumpernickel if it's baked 18 hours or longer. It was normally known as a weekend bread, so a Saturday shift, when they finished their shift, they produced the pumpernickel, they put it in the oven, they turned the oven off. And the person on Sundays coming to produce the Monday bread or whatever took it out of the oven. So a very natural, slow time baking.
And what does that bring out in the bread by that very slow cooking process?
A lot of flavor, of even a little bit of different color as well, whatever, over that slow process. And it's, yeah, I love to give dose time. And I also love to work with a lot of soft dose.
Do you still get your hands in the dough?
Oh, yeah. That is a must, because only then you can pretty much feel how much life is in.
Yes, the life of the life in the bread, which comes out in the dough. And of course, it's obviously when you do that kind of thing, you bring something special to the bread. And clearly, the local community has embraced this from the get-go, and we are now seeing the product that you produce and the. And the state of consciousness that you bring to the bread increasing everywhere, with people like you and Ursula being at the vanguard of this change, the beginning of a changeover, back to a more normal, natural way of producing our food. Marcus, it's been a delight having you in the studio today and hearing about your serendipitous travels around the world to end up in Salmon Arm. I'm sure any listener who's tasted your bread will know that they're going to be happy to hear that you'll be still around producing bread for some time, and that will make a lot of people really look forward to their next slice of bread. Thank you once again, Marcus, for being with us.
Thank you, Warren, and thanks, Tom, for bringing awareness.
Indeed. We're delighted to have you here. Thank you.